Welcome to the sixth session of the Partner Practice Enablement Bootcamp Training. My name is Michael Washam. I'm the CEO of Upstility, a training company that focuses on Microsoft Azure. I'll be the instructor for this module, and I can be reached through our website, upstility.com, or through email and Twitter, both of which are at the bottom of the screen. This session is focused on SQL Server and SharePoint Server on Azure Virtual Machines with a brief introduction to SQL Database. On the agenda for today's session, we'll discuss general best practices for running SQL Server and Azure Virtual Machines and an introduction to Azure SQL Database. We'll then cover best practices and how to get started with SharePoint Server in Microsoft Azure. Let's start off with SQL Server. What exactly is supported in Azure for SQL Server? First off, SQL Server 2014 is available in the Azure Image Gallery along with SQL Server 2012 and 2008 R2, along with a host of variations such as running on Server 2012, Server 2008, and other configurations. All SQL Server features are fully supported in Azure Virtual Machines. There may be a few minor differences in how the features are configured, but for the most part, if you can do it on-premises, you can do it in Azure. How do you get a SQL Server in Azure? As you have seen from previous sessions, you can provision a virtual machine directly from the Azure Management Portal using the Azure Platform Images, as well as a command line for automated scripts. If you have your own SQL Server running locally in Hyper-V, you can upload those VHDs and boot a virtual machine from the uploaded disks. If the data is too large to reasonably upload over the internet, you may consider the Azure Data Import and Export service that was covered earlier. This service allows you to load your data into disks and ship them to Azure. From there, the Azure team will copy the data from your disks into a target storage account, and you can then restore them to a SQL virtual machine. Finally, you can of course create your own custom SQL Server image directly in Azure using the image capture feature. The reason you may wish to create your own image is directly related to the next bullet. With software assurance, your SQL Server license may transfer and be used directly in Azure. However, if you're using one of the SQL Server platform images, you're paying for that license as part of the deployment. So for license mobility, you should definitely create your own image. Build off that last point, the steps you need to do to actually create your own SQL Server image. You need to create a virtual machine based off of a stock Windows Server base image, open with remote desktop, follow the instructions for creating a sysprepped image of SQL Server, run sysprep and shut down the virtual machine, click the capture button in a portal, and when prompted, give it your image name. Any virtual machine created from this image will not pay the license fee built into SQL image because it's implied that you're using your own license. These are the most common scenarios customers are using SQL Server in Azure for. Obviously, with SQL Server being fully supported in Azure and VMs offering a 99.95% service level agreement, running production deployments of SQL Server is a top scenario. A second key scenario is development and test. This is one of the most common workloads in the cloud, period. Having the ability to quickly spin up a SQL Server and an app server to test out a scenario or configuration, or for your real-world development test scenarios is perfect for the cloud, since it's so easy to create and create servers and delete resources when you need them. Cloud-based backup of on-premises data is a huge one as well. Storage in the cloud is incredibly durable and very cheap. The capabilities built in SQL Server to allow for cloud-based backup and storage just make the story all the better. Final scenario I want to cover is SQL Server always on with cloud-based secondaries. This is a very compelling scenario for on-premises applications. The idea is you have an existing always-on cluster with one or more failover nodes in Azure. If this on-premise cluster fails, you have a node in the cloud ready for standby. Now let's start talking about some general best practices for running SQL in an Azure virtual machine, starting with storage, which is arguably one of the most important aspects to any SQL Server. First of all, verify disk cache settings on your SQL Server deployment. There's a great white paper on using the disk cache with SQL Server virtual machines that is noted at the bottom of the slides. Some general guidelines: if your workload demands a high rate of random I.O., such as a SQL Server OLTP workload, and throughput is important to you, the general guideline is to keep the cache set to the default value of none, disabled, because Microsoft Azure Storage is capable of more IOPS than a direct attached storage disk. This setting causes a physical host local disks to be bypassed, therefore providing the highest I.O. rate. If the workload is sensitive to latency and requires a low number of concurrent read I.O.s, consider enabling read cache on the data disk. It is also recommended to test enabling database page compression to reduce I/O. Some I/O intensive workloads can gain performance benefits through data compression. Compressed tables and indexes means more data stored in fewer pages, and hence require reading fewer pages from disks, which in turn can improve the performance of workloads that are I/O intensive. For high availability, when you're deploying replicas, make sure and consider the latency between your primary and your replica. For instance, using mirroring, it's possible to deploy a primary node in West US and a replica node in East Asia. Enabling synchronous replication would probably make the latency pretty unbearable. Finally, when deploying multiple SQL Server virtual machines in a mirror or always-on availability group, ensure they're in an availability set so you're covered for physical hardware redundancy and Microsoft Azure knows not to take down your entire cluster during a host update. Finally, make sure you read the SQL Server on Azure white paper before deploying large-scale workloads. It can be found at the link below. As a general rule, do not use the D drive for SQL data. All data on the D drive is temporary and subject to be deleted. If SQL starts up and a folder, say tempdb, is configured and it doesn't exist, SQL doesn't recreate and actually recreate that folder and put your tempdb there. It'll actually just doesn't start and you'll have an outage. So use SQL file groups across multiple disks instead of striping. SQL Server is very intelligent about spreading I/O across file groups. You can use this feature to take advantage of more IOPS throughput in Azure with multiple disks. Put logs, databases, and backups on separate disks. However, one thing to keep in mind is SQL Server cannot ensure consistency with geo-replication enabled on your storage account because the data is replicated asynchronously, so ensure you disable geo-replication on the storage account for this type of configuration. Also remember, each Azure storage account has a limit. You should target 20,000 IOPS per storage account. Each virtual machine disk can handle up to 500 IOPS, so do the math and ensure that you are not, that if you are saturating your disks with I/O, that you're distributing virtual machines across enough storage accounts to actually handle it. It's also a good idea to consider compressing data files when transferring in and out of Microsoft Azure for cost and efficiency. Migrating to Azure. Make sure you are taking into account the cost impact of the SQL Server deployment. The Microsoft Azure calculator can be used to estimate how much compute, storage, and bandwidth will actually cost. If you need to migrate more data than can be easily uploaded, again, consider the import and export service, which allows you to send your data to Microsoft on physical disks. Verify the version of SQL Server that you are using is supported in Azure. If you're bringing your own, SQL 2008, 2008 R2, and SQL 2012, along with 2014, are all supported. If you're using the platform images, you can easily create a virtual machine using SQL 2008 R2, 2012, and 2014. For licensing, just to recap, you can of course bring your own license, but it does require either creating a custom SQL image or installing SQL Server directly on the virtual machine. If you use a platform image, the license for SQL Server is included in that price. Don't forget that there are differences between some of the platform images. For example, there are images that are specifically configured and tuned for data warehousing. Let's talk about security now. You should implement similar practices that you do on premises. Things like strong passwords, non-obvious usernames are all strategies that apply to the cloud too. If you're concerned about regulatory compliance for your data in the cloud, the Azure Trust Center should be your first stop. The details about Azure's compliance accreditations, the strategy for penetration testing, details on how privacy is implemented, as well as many resources on keeping your applications and data secure in the cloud, can all be found in one central location. Here are some general best practices about virtual machines in Azure that apply to SQL Server too. You should make sure you remove any unused endpoints when not in use. So if you're administering your virtual machines over the internet, you can use PowerShell to automate adding and removing the remote desktop and remote PowerShell endpoints, and also access control lists. If you can, consider using a point-to-site or virtual network for administration, along with just completely removing the public endpoints for management. This dramatically decreases your attack surface by closing publicly accessible entry points. Finally, ensure if you do have these publicly available, like remote desktop, that you are using an access control list to lock these down as much as possible. In addition to the traditional features in SQL Server, there are now several Azure-specific features that are coming online from the SQL Server team. So for SQL Server 2012, you can directly backup and restore a database to an Azure storage account. This works whether you're running SQL Server on-premises or directly in Azure. SQL Server 2014 brings in several new capabilities. Among them are a database migration wizard that will literally provision a virtual machine and migrate your database for you to an Azure VM. SQL Server Always On also supports hybrid connectivity, meaning you can deploy on-premises always-on cluster and add replicas directly to Azure as a cloud-based standby. SQL database files can be created and used directly in Azure Storage as well. SQL Server Backup comes in two flavors, directly backing up a database to a storage account, or a more holistic approach using the SQL Server Managed Backup feature. Managed Backup is based on the retention period and transaction workload of the database and supports point-in-time restore for the retention periods, time period specified. It can be enabled at the database level or for an entire instance of SQL Server. So let's discuss high availability and disaster recovery within Azure VMs for SQL. There are really three key scenarios that we want to discuss. How to run SQL Server in Azure with high availability in mind, how to perform disaster recovery between an on-premises deployment and Azure, and finally, how to perform disaster recovery across multiple Microsoft Azure regions. The first scenario is using SQL Server Always On Availability Groups in Azure. This is a fully supported option, even with the listener. Always On allows you to have a primary database with multiple replicas. Best of all, the replicas can be used while they're in use in read-only mode. This allows you to take advantage of the additional resources for read-only workloads like reporting applications. Authentication between the two nodes of an always-on availability group is through Active Directory. The high-level requirements to make this work are, you need a virtual network, you need Active Directory, and you need to deploy the nodes in an availability set, and ensure the SQL always-on listener is secure via an access control list. In a diagram, you can see how a simple deployment can be architected. The primary replica performs synchronous commits to the secondary replica, so the databases are available for automatic failover through the listener. All the SQL nodes belong to the same availability set, so Azure does not take them down for a host update and to ensure redundancy with the physical server, network, and power. SQL Server 2014 supports a hybrid model where the always-on availability group is created on-premises, but you can also add a secondary replica to Azure. This architecture allows you to have a hot standby and backup that is completely isolated from your physical network. This does require site-to-site virtual network connection, or ExpressRoute, for the authentication to Active Directory and replication traffic. The high-level requirements make this work, Active Directory with virtual network, or obviously with site-to-site or ExpressRoute, and then you basically add a secondary replica to the Azure virtual network. SQL has a built-in support for directly creating the replica in your Azure subscription, and it'll automatically add it to the availability group once it's been provisioned. SQL Server mirroring is still a viable option. The biggest benefit to using mirroring over an always-on availability group is the ability to use it with certificates as authentication instead of just Active Directory. So mirroring does support both options, AD and certificates, but Always On only supports AD. So kind of the high-level requirements to make this work is, first, you, of course, deploy a virtual network. Optionally, use Active Directory, depending on how you want to authenticate, and then establish the mirror. And, of course, don't forget to deploy the nodes into an availability set. You can establish a hybrid connection between Azure regions using a site-to-site tunnel with regional virtual networks or a direct connection using ExpressRoute. Regional virtual networks can connect to any region in Azure, where most ExpressRoute circuits can only be linked to other virtual networks on the same continent. I mentioned earlier that SQL Server can use Azure Blob Storage as a direct backup and restore medium. Using Azure Storage gives you a highly available durable storage. Each file or blob has three copies in a region for additional durability, enabling geo-replication on a storage account, and you get a geo-redundant backup solution. All three copies of the backup file will be replicated to a remote region. This works for SQL servers hosted in the cloud or on-premises in your own data center. Log shipping is also a viable disaster recovery solution and fully supported in Azure. To deliver a hybrid disaster recovery, a site-to-site or tunnel or express route is required along with Active Directory to support log shipping file shares. Finally, this session has been focused primarily on SQL Server. However, I do want to introduce Azure SQL Database as well for those of you who are not aware of it. SQL Database is a relational database as a service. It's a multi-tenant service that allows you to quickly add databases in Azure and easily scale to your needs with a much lower cost in management and maintenance overhead per database. SQL Database has a lot of new capabilities around performance and along with business continuity that I'll discuss shortly. SQL Database has recently announced the retirement of the web and business SKUs, and they're now settling on the new standardized service tiers. The basic tier is designed for very small databases with very limited users, such as development and test scenarios. Standard tier is your middle-sized applications. Not too big, but definitely not small enough to justify just basic. And the premium tier is for mission-critical applications and applications that need to scale to a very high number of transactions. The standard and premium SKUs can be further divided into performance tiers that allow you more fine-grained control over how many resources you're actually paying for. One of the key changes with the new tiers is the ability for SQL Database to offer predictable performance. A common complaint before was there was really no way to know if your application was going to be throttled based on other tenants in the service. With the new service offering, you are offered predictable performance, which is measured in a construct called a DTU, or Database Throughput Unit. A DTU is simply a unit of measurement of resources. Each service tier and its performance tier has a guaranteed number of resources allocated that makes it really easy for you to measure in a portal just as a percentage of resource usage. As you can see, each service tier, when combined with the performance tier, has a number of committed resources that allows you to easily predict your performance. SQL Database also has several new features for business continuity. The ability to easily roll the database back to a specified time using point-in-time restore. The amount of time you can roll back is based on the service tier. All tiers support the ability to easily copy and export your database for a backup. The premium tier supports a new feature called Active Georeplication. Active Georeplication allows you to have multiple secondary databases in remote regions that can be configured for replication. The active part comes from the fact that you can use these databases in read-only workloads until you actually need to failover in the event the primary goes down. Standard supports georeplication too, but the secondaries cannot be used in read-only workloads. Let's compare SQL Server to SQL Database. Each has its own set of advantages and scenarios. As a general rule, if you have an existing application that uses SQL Server, it will be much easier to migrate to SQL Server on a VM than a direct migration to SQL Database. However, SQL Database should absolutely be investigated for developing new applications. This is a managed database service, which allows you to focus less on the infrastructure management and much more time on the application design and development. SQL Server on a virtual machine supports a full set of SQL Server functionality, and SQL Database supports a subset. They also do share a common core set of technology. So they both use TDS as a network transport. The dialect is the same, T-SQL. And database access APIs are the same, so ADO.NET, ODBC, etc. They can even use the same development management tool. In this demonstration, we're going to walk through and use the Azure Management Portal to create a new SQL database. So I'm going to go to New, Data Services, SQL Database, and Custom Create. Now I'm going to call this database OrchardDB because it's actually going to be the back end for an Azure website that's hosting the Orchard CMS system on it. So I'm going to go ahead and use the preview edition of the new service tiers. So I'm going to go ahead and change this to be a standard tier. I don't know how big my database for sure will eventually grow, but I can scale it up from the S1 tier or the S2, or since I'm really just starting out, I could actually pick the basic tier and then use this one just for testing, and then I can easily scale a database up later once I actually start getting traffic. So go ahead and create a new SQL database server. Specify the demo user, demo password, and now I need to select the region this database will be deployed to. This obviously should be in the same region that your website's actually going to be deployed in. So I'm going to go ahead and deploy the website in West US, which means I should deploy the database as well in West US. Now this last check mark is really important. Since I need to allow access from my Azure website to the SQL database, I'm going to go ahead and check allow Windows Azure services to access the server. Now we'll wait a few moments for the database to actually be created. Now that the database has been created, I'm going to open up this database, and at the very bottom I'm going to copy the server name because this is what we're actually going to use when we configure Orchard to connect back to this database. So I'll copy that. And for now, I'm just going to save it off in the notepad so I can have easy access to it later. So next step is I'm going to go through and create a new Azure website. So I'm going to go to New Compute, Website, and I'm going to choose from Gallery. And Orchard is a CMS solution, so I'll select CMS to filter down, and Orchard CMS. Now this does have to be unique. I'm creating a new resource in AzureWebsites.net. And now I need to go ahead and also create a new web hosting plan. And this web hosting plan is just like the database, going to be put in West US. So next up is we really just need to wait until the website has been provisioned, and then we can go in and actually configure Orchard to talk back to our SQL database. The Orchard website is now up and running, so I can copy that URL, open it up in IE, and now we can go and actually configure our database. Well, the site to connect to our database, to be clear. Okay, so we'll go ahead and give the site a name, give a username and a password for the admin user. And next thing I need to do is configure Orchard to store the data. So I'm going to go ahead and tell it an existing SQL Server or SQL Express database. And I'm going to take the sample connection string they give, paste it in, except I'm going to take the connection string that we, or the server name and port that we have for our SQL database, and go through here and modify this connection string to make it point to my SQL database. So data source needs to point to the database.windows.net URL. The initial catalog needs to point to OrchardDB, which is the name of the database that we created. And the username and password, of course, needs to be the username and password we created for the database. Of course, you can add additional users and with different permissions on your own. Okay, so next I just need to go ahead and click Finish Setup and let Orchard populate the database with its tables. So Orchard Setup has completed and all of our tables are now created in the database. So let me go back over to the database real quick just to show how easy it is to actually scale the database once our site gets traffic. So I can go back to SQL Databases, open up OrchardDB, click on the Scale tab, and right now we're at Basic, but say our blog actually got popular or whatever site we were created here, and we need to, or it start getting large, it start getting a lot of data, I can change that standard, change the performance level from S1 to S2 for the increased volume, and now I just have to go down and click Save. And this is a completely online process, so your database is not down. And now we're basically increasing the scale of our database, and after a few short minutes, after the scale operation is completed, our database will be scaled up to accommodate the new load. Now let's shift gears and talk about SharePoint Server on Microsoft Azure. The SharePoint Cloud Continuum slide represents the control versus cost efficiency value proposition of hosting SharePoint on-premises in Azure Virtual Machines, and finally in Office 365. The farther to the left of the continuum is the least cost effective, but by far the most control. On-premises, you own the physical hardware, the networking stack, on up to configuring the high availability and disaster recovery of your SharePoint farm. In addition to the physical control, you also have full control over the hardware. You also have full control over the software. This means you can run custom web parts, workflows, and even integrate third-party applications and management tools into your farm. The middle ground is what this session is all about. Here you lose some degree of physical hardware control, or gain a lot of spare time, depending on how you look at these things, but you also still maintain the degree of control that allows you to deploy your highly customized solutions. You are still responsible for everything from the software, including high availability, disaster recovery, and scale, but you do get the benefit of no longer managing the physical servers, the network components, and the underlying physical storage. Last scenario, running SharePoint in Office 365, is by far the most cost efficient. Management overhead is minimal because it's a purely managed service. High availability, scale, and management as a service, if you really will, but at the cost of losing some of the software and hardware level control. The right scenario for you obviously depends on the requirements of your specific scenario. SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint 2013 are both supported in Azure, as well as all the dependencies, so Active Directory and SQL Server. One caveat, Fast Search for SharePoint 2010 is not officially supported in Azure. For convenience, there is a SharePoint 2013 trial image available in the Azure Image Gallery. This is essentially a sysprepped image. The SharePoint prerequisites are installed, and SharePoint has been installed all the way up to running the product configuration wizard. The image is pre-configured with SharePoint 2013 trial, but it is possible to switch this out and run with your own keys. For SharePoint 2010, it's recommended that you're going to end up creating your own custom image using the capture process. Just like SQL Server, IOPS is one of the most important factors of your the performance of a SharePoint farm. Since most of the underlying data for SharePoint is stored in SQL Server, ensure that you spend the time from the previous portion of the session and read that SQL Server white paper to make sure your SQL servers are configured for HA and scalability. SharePoint is designed to scale out, not up. You can add as many SQL servers as needed for separate content and search databases, and each SharePoint tier can be scaled out as well by adding multiple virtual machines and enabling the correct roles. Some general good practices about deploying SharePoint in an Azure environment. SharePoint must be deployed only in a virtual network because SharePoint requires Active Directory, which itself has a dependency on the virtual network for static IP addresses. If your applications are I/O intensive, ensure that you're spreading the IOPS across multiple disks to take advantage of the increased throughput. Ensure that each logical tier, web apps and search, or however you want to model the SharePoint farm, is grouped in separate availability sets for data center level high availability. Ensure that you're using built-in high availability features for network endpoints, such as TCP and HTTP health probes. So go back to the infrastructure services networking session if you want a refresher over how those work. And finally, take advantage of the platform by automating often repeated tasks when possible. Don't forget that you do not pay for the compute time for a stopped virtual machine, just the underlying storage, which is much cheaper. You can easily script shutting down part or all of your servers in a SharePoint farm when they're not in use. If you'd like to try out a SharePoint farm in Azure, there's a set of PowerShell scripts that are hosted in GitHub, which make it relatively easy to spin up a virtual network, Active Directory, or a full-blown SharePoint farm. There are two templates to try out, one that configures a highly available farm, and one that's for a single virtual machine per tier. Also, the Azure team is working very hard behind the scenes to make it easy to deploy SharePoint from the portal. The SharePoint preview portal now supports directly deploying a SharePoint farm. Here's an example of what the highly available template creates. You'll have a virtual network created with two domain controllers, two web servers, two application servers, and three SQL servers configured in SQL always-on availability group. Each tier will be deployed in an Azure availability set. Front-end web tier is enabled with an HTTP endpoint probe, so if one node goes down, load balancer will automatically remove it. And keep in mind, by default, this template uses 27 cores and trial subscriptions max out at 20. So if you want to try this one, the scripts from GitHub, make sure that you have your quota increased before you get started. A single virtual machines template is easy to try out as well. It's one virtual machine per tier, but it is designed to allow you to add additional servers if you wish, and it's obviously going to be much faster to deploy to as well. In this demonstration, I will create a SharePoint farm using the preview Azure Management Portal. I'm going to click New, SharePoint Server Farm. And from here, I can specify the name of the resource group. So I'm going to call this SP Demo Group. And the resource group is a logical container that you can use to control the lifetime of multiple resources as a single management unit. This can include storage accounts, virtual machines, websites, SQL databases, etc. Next, I can enter the username and the password that will be used for the local administrator accounts and the domain accounts as well for the SharePoint configuration. To make the SharePoint farm highly available, I just need to select the check mark next to Enable High Availability, and the template will actually ensure that the web tier, application tier, database tier, and even the domain controllers are configured in a highly available configuration. I can go into the domain controllers configuration and specify an Active Directory domain name, such as contoso.com, and the prefix to use for the virtual machines. I can also change the pricing tier, so if I wanted to select a larger instance size or a smaller instance size, I could actually do that right here. So I can do the same thing by selecting the SQL servers and change the hostname prefix and optionally the size. And same thing with the SharePoint servers. I can go to the optional configuration section and I can specify virtual network settings, storage count, and I can even enable diagnostics on the virtual machines. Here's where I can actually select which subscription to use, so I can deploy this into my subscription and finally select the location where this SharePoint farm will actually be deployed to. The last step is to actually just click the create button, and this will actually start triggering the creation of the SharePoint farm behind the scenes. creating the SharePoint form will actually take several hours whenever it's configured in a highly available configuration. So I'm going to go ahead and pause the demo for now, and we'll come back once the form has been completed. Now that my SharePoint form has completed provisioning, I can go ahead and click Browse, Virtual Machines, and we can see basically all the virtual machines that were created for this SharePoint form. So you can see I have two domain controllers, I have two app servers, two web servers, and three SQL servers. And the SQL servers are actually configured with SQL Always On to make it highly available. If I open up the configuration for Web 1 and scroll down, you can see that this virtual machine is part of an availability set already. So as part of the deployment, it actually already added the virtual machines to be highly available. So to validate the form is working, I really just need to take one of the DNS names for Web 1, which is going to be SV Demo Group. I can browse to svdemogroup.cloudapp.net, and this will tell me whether my SharePoint form is working. So we've not configured SharePoint to use any kind of claims-based authentication such as Azure AD, so it's actually going to go ahead and prompt us for our Windows credentials. And this is going to use the same user credentials that we typed in originally when we created the form configuration. So at this point, I have a SharePoint form that I can go ahead and provision the team site template for, the community site, whichever template I need to use. And this is going to be perfect for doing development and test or production testing or anything you really need to do. The next step would actually be to configure authentication and to deploy any custom solutions and web parts, workflows that you may need. In this session, we spent a lot of time talking about best practices with SQL Server and SharePoint Server in Microsoft Azure. We discussed new features in SQL Server 2014 and SQL 2012, like the ability to backup and restore directly from Azure Storage. With SQL 2014, we discussed the new ability of SQL to add a replica node in Azure from an on-premises availability group for hybrid failover scenarios, and the ability to migrate databases directly from on-prem to Azure with a simple wizard. We also introduced SQL Database and discussed some of the key differences between the two technologies. We saw how to use a new preview portal to deploy a SharePoint form for testing, and we discussed best practices for both workloads, such as optimizing storage and ensuring your nodes are configured correctly for high availability using Azure Availability Sets. So coming up next, learn how to manage and monitor your Azure virtual machines.